Welcome into the Flight Plan Podcast. Tim McMaster here along with Zach Rosenblatt. We were away for a week, and that time I apparently forgot how to produce this show and live stream. We have a lot to get to, though. Zach was back at it at practice this week with the OTA, so we'll have some observation from OTAs. We'll also dig into some of the key competitions facing this Jets team as we move forward into the summer. Sauce Gardner, big rankings as far as where he stacks up against the rest of the NFL. We'll get into that. But first, as Zach teased, if you are here for the glitchy version of this at the start, he's got a ring on his finger, people. Went through with it. Congratulations. Yeah. We got a few pictures I can throw up here.
Yeah, yeah.
Going to go through. Is that first dance? If you're not watching on YouTube, we have pictures of the first dance. Right after the I do's, leaving down the aisle, the happy couple at dinner, the reception, showing off the new bling, and
Connor Hughes
dancing with the bride as only he can. There was also video of you riding a bull, Zach.
Yes.
I didn't load that up, but just All in all, you haven't gotten, you know, no honeymoon yet or anything, but Nashville looked like it was beautiful. And how are things getting back to work?
Well, I joked on Tuesday that I got married on Friday, and for my honeymoon, I was going to track quarterback stats at Jets OTAs because it's beautiful this time of the year at Florham Park. It was like a crisp 80 degrees.
Yeah.
Samantha wasn't there, so I had to leave her at home for our honeymoon. I'm just kidding. We're going to Greece at the end of the month. But yeah, man,
not it was Egypt.
Not going to Egypt. Not Egypt. Okay. That would have been funny. But yeah, it was a special weekend. Like, it was all the cliches everybody warns you about: it going too fast, not eating, you know, little things messing up that nobody else is going to notice. Like, it all came to fruition, and we just had an amazing weekend. The thing you were alluding to with the bull riding, that we did, like, a thank you for everybody who's saying congrats in there, by the way. Somebody did point out that Taylor pointed out that I did not have my hat on at the wedding. I did put on a hat.
It was a little jarring when you first sent me those photos.
Yeah. I did put on a hat in the latter half that said Nashville, because it's hard for me to go a long time without wearing a hat. People think it's only because I'm bald. I actually do just like wearing hats. I have like 50 of them. This is a new one I got to commemorate my Nashville trip. Patagonia, my favorite company, with Nashville on it. But I did want to tell a quick story, just like a classic Zach thing for anybody who knows me. I'm known in my family and among my friends for always leaving something, like, somewhere I've been, whether it's like a my brother's house or a friend's house or a bar or whatever it is. My timing could not have been worse this time around, I would say. Not to like get too into the weeds, but like, I was in charge of like clearing out the Airbnb. We were going to a different hotel, so I had to pack up all of our stuff, put it in the rental car. I then dropped off the rental car with a couple friends who were helping me, and then we Ubered from the rental car place to the hotel to drop it off. And then we went to the venue where we hung out for a while. And then I was going to get ready there. And then I was going to go somewhere else for the first look photos with Samantha. We were going to do it at the pedestrian bridge, which has a great view of Nashville. I'm getting ready to get in the Uber with my cousin's fiance, Tate, who was going to be there with me. And I realized I cannot find the shoes anywhere or my bow tie. I cannot spot my bow tie. Could not find my shoes. Actually, I didn't remember I didn't have the bow tie until I got in the car to go back to the hotel to try and see if I could find the shoes there. Anyway, so I'm like freaking out. I'm like, oh, I swear to God, they better be at the hotel. Just in case my brother's getting ready to go buy me another pair. We're on the way. I realize I don't have my bow tie either. We get to the hotel. I just rummage through all of our luggage. It's not anywhere. I am freaking out. My phone is semi-low on battery. Luckily, Tate was keeping me calm. But and my brother, hero of the day, is my co-best man, Jordan. He went to, I don't know how he did it so fast. He went to some suit store that was open, got me a bow tie, got me a pair of shoes in my size, delivered them to where we were doing the first look photos. Tate then, it was like a baton pass. Tate grabbed them, ran to me. I put them on real fast. And then we set up for the first look photo where Samantha walked up and I saw her for the first time.
So she didn't know any of this.
She did. the irony was I was kind of the villa in a way, the one that was melting down. She was completely feeling good.
We'll do pictures from the knees up. It's all good.
Because I had explained to her, like, you can't go to the first look yet. And to my brother's credit, when he got to, because he was like, I'm getting too much in the weeds, but he was like picking up Samantha to take her to the first look photo. And he pretended like he was the one that forgot his shoes and bow tie but she had already known at that point. So he was lying to her, but he was trying to like protect me. But anyway, like I was freaking out the whole time. So I was all amped up. We get through the first look photos. We're on the way back to the venue. I finally calmed down and the rest of the night was perfect. So if that was the worst thing that happened, then it was pretty good. But it was just like,
you got to have a good story about your wedding.
It's a story I'm never going to forget. Yeah. And it's something that, you know, for me, I am disorganized in that way where I'm always forgetting something. And I had been so good throughout this whole process.
So she better get used to it, is what you're saying.
Oh, she's used to it already. She gets very, she's for sure going to listen to this, if not watching right now. She's going to get very mad at me. But like, it's just because I did a lot of the plan, not all of it. Like, we were a team for sure. But like, a lot of the research, the plan, and get everything together, putting together a lot of things, I was like in charge of like more than you would think. And I think I did a pretty good job. So, of course, like, this was the, like, when it had to do something that was mine, I was like, I forgot it. So I didn't have shoes for a minute and it worked out. Lovely wedding, had an amazing time. Connor was there. Diana was there. Andy Vasquez, a couple other guys in the media business. But yeah, it was cool and worked out. Nashville's an amazing city. I recommend getting married there. If you're trying to figure out where to go, it was absolutely perfect. So yeah, that's the story of classic Zach at the wedding, I would say.
Nice. All right. Well, congratulations. And with that, we move on to the Jets, and we'll put a chapter in there on the YouTube so the people don't complain about all the talk about the wedding. All right. Position battles. We'll go through a handful of these. You had a story out last week leading up to your wedding. Actually, I think it published like the day before.
Yeah, when I was in Nashville. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's get through the key ones. But starting at center, because I think this one's fascinating to me, because it's Joe Tippmann versus Josh Myers, obviously. And we've talked about it a little bit, but like, Tippmann was a second round pick a year ago and wasn't bad. And you would think, if you think about organizations as a whole, when you take a player in the second round expecting them to be a starter and then they play pretty well as rookies, you wouldn't think there would be the pressure of, hey, we signed somebody who might take your job. But that's kind of where we are, because Josh Myers happens to be Justin Fields' college center. There's that relationship. It just makes for this to be a really interesting battle. So that said, what direction do you think it ends up going
in? I still lean towards Tippmann being the favorite. But again, you have to remember that this coaching staff has no ties to Joe Tippmann technically. So they can feel comfortable just picking the best center. And if they feel that's Josh Myers, if he outplays him in training camp is really where the competitions are going to really like take off. Like, you know, stuff in OTAs matters to a degree more in terms of like you showing your preparedness, how much you're willing to learn, you know, how much you're adapting to this new culture, all that stuff. But how these guys do in training camp in the preseason, how they capitalize on their reps, you know, let's say they're switching them off with Justin Fields and Tyrod Taylor, like, are they performing with both of those guys? And so, yeah, I mean, but I get the sense it's a legit competition. So it's something we're going to be tracking in camp. If you remember last year, Joe Tippmann was struggling with the snaps. Like, that was a big storyline early in camp.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't really have that issue very much during the season. I don't remember any, there was maybe a couple bad snaps, but not like enough to where it became a thing. So yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. I mean, they didn't give Josh Myers a lot of money, so you'd think that would mean that they didn't give him like starter money. But if he's the best option, he's more experienced. Like you said, as experienced with Justin Fields. So there's a lot of, you know, factors at play here. But ultimately, it's a competition, which if you had guessed at the beginning of the offseason, I would say we probably would have said, okay, they're good at center. We can think about whatever, right tackle or whatever. So it is interesting that that's a competition, but I think there is one.
And so somebody obviously is going to lose this competition. What does that mean? Because you have this line where there's not like a lot of clear openings where somebody can move. So does the loser of this competition just become the backup center, or do they become someone who can become a swing, or what is the situation? Well,
that's interesting, because Josh Myers has only played center in the NFL, though it's largely because he's been a full-time starter since he was a rookie. Whereas Tippmann actually played some guard as a rookie, and so there is flexibility there. They both are big centers. Like, they're both 6'5 and 6'6, which is really big. Maybe Myers, if they believe Myers can play guard, then he's a versatile backup as well. So I think ultimately that whoever loses the job is just the top interior backup. Or, you know, let's say Josh Myers loses the job, and then AVT or John Simpson gets hurt, you can slide Joe Tippmann over to one of the spots and then plug Josh Myers in at center. Like, I wouldn't say necessarily that Tippmann's versatility makes it more likely as the backup, because you can shuffle things around if you really have to. But, yeah, I mean, it's going to be let the best man win. And I think fans were surprised by that initially, but it's just going to, they need the best five offensive line out there, whoever that is, whether, you know, the fans want to believe in Joe Tippmann or the coaches believe more. I'm not saying they do, but if they were to believe more in Josh Myers' ability to lead the offensive line, then you have to take the best five. Like, this offensive line needs to be really good, because this is going to be a very run heavy team. So I don't blame them for pushing Joe Tippmann, even if it is a surprise.
Good question from Lou Giordano in the chat. Isn't there something to be said for making the center choice sooner rather than later, because it is such an important position as far as continuity across the line?
To a degree, but I think they're both going to get enough reps that I don't see that being a major issue, especially because, you know, Joe Tippmann has experience with Tyrod Taylor, so he at least has chemistry with the backup. He needs to get it with Justin Fields as well, whereas Josh Myers has it with Fields, so there is some latent, like, familiarity there, but I don't see that being an issue necessarily.
All right, moving on. Number two wide receiver, you have Josh Reynolds, who this coaching staff brought in and is familiar with, the former Lion. You have Alan Lazard, who none of us thought would be on this roster at this point, 6 months ago.
Yeah,
it doesn't fit, like, the way I say that, right? It doesn't seem like it's competition at all, but who knows?
Yeah, I feel like it'll be wind up being Josh Reynolds, but again, I do think, you know, it could be they rotate. It could be they're 2 and 3, and it's kind of interchangeable. Like, I think they are guys that their biggest value to this offense is going to be their ability as run blockers. Weirdly enough, like, that's like the first thing that is always brought up with Aaron Glenn and the staff, is that the whole line, you don't block, don't get the rock, or however it goes. So Reynolds' familiarity with Tanner Engstrand and Aaron Glenn certainly helps. And I like his ability more. Like, in my story, I have some stats in there. I don't have them off the top of my head, but he was, like, very high. I think he was, like, second among all receivers 2 years ago, when he had a really good year in Detroit, in terms of converting his catches for first downs. So, and, like, getting yard, like, in terms of first downs over expected and things like that. So he comes up in the clutch pretty a lot. Whereas I think Lazard, while his highs can be really high, he can make some impressive plays, he also tends to drop the ball a lot. And I don't think Reynolds does quite as much. He is coming off a year that was full of, like, injuries. He got shot at one point, came back, was cut, went to the Jaguars, didn't really do much there. But they believe in him here. So I think he'll wind up being the number two, but it might be an interchangeable thing where those guys are either rotating or the 2 and the 3. And then they have, like, other guys who have different skill sets who I'm sure we'll get into now, who kind of rotate in there as well.
Yeah, the number four receiver, because those guys will be 2 and 3. So when you look at number four, and that's when you get to the guys that need to be doing other things other than catch the ball: Tyler Johnson, Xavier Gibson, Arian Smith. Xavier Gibson obviously won over the old coaching staff as an undrafted free agent, was real favorite of that staff. But, like, as you mentioned with Tippmann, new staff, no loyalty, makes things tricky for him, I think.
Yeah. I'll say one person I forgot to include in there was Corley. In my defense, I had wedding brain at the time. Also, there's some chat in the comments about Amari Cooper. I do not see that happening. He's pretty washed up at this point. And I don't really see him being a massive upgrade over what they have, frankly, unless he's what he was 3 years ago or whatever. But in terms of wide receiver three, it's an interesting collection of guys. You have Corley, who has been banged up, and Glenn, in so many words without saying it, basically said you can't make the club from the tub. Like, they're optimistic about their ability to, like, carve out a role for him if he's healthy, but he's been banged up for all of OTAs, I believe. So he hasn't really had a chance to prove to the staff yet, and he's somebody who needs to prove to the staff as much as anybody. Tyler Johnson is a really intriguing guy. He's never had him, I don't think, more than 300 yards in a season, but he's really good in contested catch balls. He's pretty fast. You have Gibson, who they were very high on when he was a rookie. He's pretty much become almost exclusively a returner and hasn't really done anything on offense, but he can be a gadget type guy. And Arian Smith is someone they invested in. Like, this is a guy that they drafted pretty high. They believe in his speed and his ability to move him around the formation and things like that. He's shown some flashes in OTAs. He's really, really fast. I think he's going to have a role of some sort this year. So I think it's going to be interesting to see which of these guys gets most of the reps, because I don't think, like, if I had to say an early favorite, maybe Tyler Johnson, just because he's a veteran and I think he is decent for like a wide receiver four. But I could see a scenario where we're talking about Arian Smith as like they're one, a guy that's playing a lot at some point.
All right, tight end, and this, you know, you go back to center where you have Joe Tippmann and then Josh Myers, and Josh Myers' big edge is the relationship with the quarterback. Same thing here at tight end, except the other guy, well, I guess it is very similar, Mason Taylor being similarly drafted as Tippmann. So you have Mason Taylor, and then you have Jeremy Ruckert, who obviously has had a rough three seasons, even though there was high expectations of him coming out of Ohio State, but new staff that he can win over, and then throw a wild card in there and a guy like Stone Smart too.
Yeah. I mean, I think the goal is for Mason Taylor to be their starting tight end. I mean, he's the most talented one. We've seen some flash out of an OTAs. We'll get into that a little bit, cause they talked about him quite a bit yesterday. But yeah, I think he'll wind up being their top tight end, whether it's right away or not, I don't know. But he's the most talented pass catcher. If he can make some strides as a blocker, he's the complete package. He's the kind of guy that you could count on as a rookie for a pretty good statistical year. I mean, they don't have, like, we just went through their wide receiver two options being Josh Reynolds and Alan Lazard. Like, there's no reason to think Mason Taylor can't wind up being their number two, if not number three target behind like Breece Hall or something like that. So pretty obvious to me he'll be number one. I am intrigued by Stone Smart as a guy who can rotate in as a pass catcher. Jeremy Rucker comes in the 12th personnel as a blocker, things like that. But it's a solid group if Mason Taylor lives up to his potential and Jeremy Rucker can improve as a blocker. I think that's an interesting group.
Stone Smart is an all-name guy, too. It's a great
name. It is, for sure.
Great name. All right, one more. Let's talk safety. Tony Adams, the veteran, the incumbent, and then you have Malachi Moore coming in as the fourth-round pick. And it seems like you wrote about it this week. He's looked good it's OTAs, but he's looked good.
Yeah. 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 I mean, he had a practice, not a practice. And he had a pick six against Brady Cook. Again, it's not like Justin Fields or Taylor, but he had a pick six against Brady Cook. The whole team celebrated. I've been saying since they drafted him, he has a legit shot to start in week one. Tony Adams had a down year last year. I don't think it was as bad as everybody says. I don't think he's like an A+ starter. I think he can be a solid two or three safety, but I think Moore has better potential, and he's the kind of guy that fits in an Aaron Glenn defense. He's in the Brian Branch mold, and so that's another one we'll be tracking throughout camp, but it would not surprise me at all if he's starting in week one.
All right, that's some of the key battles. There's other ones, but I thought that was a good five of them to talk about that we'll be following all summer long, obviously. All right, you also have a story this week about just things you noticed yesterday when media was at OTAs, not necessarily standouts, but things to take note of. Some of these are the same names that we just talked about, so I'll kind of avoid those. But hey, we have to talk about Justin Fields every show, right? That's what we do in the podcasting world. Talk about the quarterback. And Fields' story seems like it continues to be kind of the same. He's not blowing anybody away, but he's showing stuff.
Yeah, well, Aaron Glenn had a funny moment in the press conference yesterday where a reporter who hadn't been there for OTAs, I guess, and so you ask about the quarterback every press conference this time of the year, so she wasn't doing anything wrong, like, let's be clear. But she asked, like, what can you say about what Justin Fields has showed you, or however she phrased it. He's like, you guys ask me that every single time I'm up here. And she's like, well, it's my first time here. She's like, and he jokingly was like, well, that's on you. But then he answered it and he said that, you know, maybe he won't be Joe Namath, but I feel really good about him and what he's shown, his quiet confidence. In terms of like the on-field of what I seen, like I missed one practice, obviously, because I was in Nashville. It sounded like he had a pretty good day that day, but I still think he's holding on to the ball too long is my biggest concern. That is something that they can work through, start getting some quick action and things like that. And once they're like having real competitive periods. But his athleticism is so obvious. His arm strength is obvious. I think he's been pretty good in the intermediate areas. And he has the most confidence when he's throwing it to Garrett Wilson. Like, Garrett had one of the best catches I've seen in practice. He like basically mossed Michael Carter II on a throw that wasn't very accurate, frankly. But he went up and got it. Having Garrett's going to help Justin Fields a lot. even beyond just the skills, like just having someone who he trusts in that way and that he knows so well. But yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say I've been blown away by him. Like, I don't know that I've seen enough to say he's fixed. The holding on to the ball thing is an issue, but he also has the ability to scramble unlike any quarterback the Jets have had. So I'm going to be fascinated to see. I don't know if he's, how much or if he'll get any playing time in the preseason, but I'm curious to see what that'll look like. And then once the season starts, like how much is he going to be looking to take off and run right away? How much is he going to be holding on to the ball too long? And how much is that going to affect the O-line? Like this time of the year, it's hard for the O-line to really like win against the D-line as much, but it certainly is hard for them to win if the quarterback holds on to it too long. So, you know, and Aaron Rodgers, for all his faults, like he did a pretty good job of getting rid of the ball quickly, at least when the offense was at its best with him. So that's going to be something to keep an eye on because it's been an issue for him as long as he's been in the NFL. So I imagine they know this and they're working on it, but I do think he needs to get rid of the ball quicker.
Man, I hope he plays in the preseason or it's going to be.
I think he will. Rough preseason. Well, I also think Aaron Glenn is like he wants these guys to earn every rep. Like I think he's more of old school in that way. So I am curious to see how it goes. Justin Fields needs the reps, I think. So mm-hmm. I would hope he plays. That's going to be a topic for down the line, obviously. But I don't. My early prediction would be that he plays a little bit in the preseason, but that's not on any authority or with any reporting. It's just a gut feeling.
Garrett Wilson, obviously his favorite target, and doing what we know what Garrett's capable of, right? Is just catch radius. It was like one of the big things when he was even coming out of college was like, this guy has a ridiculous catch radius, just throw it in the area. And Justin is where Aaron, I think, especially once Adams arrived, I don't think was really willing to just do that. I think Justin's definitely going to, and is already showing that in OTAs.
Yeah, like I would say, like the fact that he has the confidence to throw it in Garrett Wilson's general direction, knowing that he's going to be able to go up and get it, that might get him to be more willing to throw the ball quicker, maybe like with Garrett out there. Garrett's going to be double teamed. Like they need somebody else to emerge, whether it's Mason Taylor, whether it's Josh Reynolds, Lazard, Tyler Johnson, Breece. They need guys to make it so they can't just double team Garrett Wilson every play. Because as of right now, what defense is looking at this offense and is scared of anybody in the passing game besides Garrett Wilson? Like, we need to make sure that they're going to emphasize Breece in the passing game. I think they will, but we need to see it. The last staff did not enough. If they get double team him every play, is that going to scare Justin Fields away from targeting him? So it's going to be something to watch. Like, they need these guys to emerge. I think Justin Reynolds can be a solid player for them, but he needs to become somebody that the defense needs to prepare for in order for Justin Fields to have the confidence to throw it to Garrett one-on-one, no matter how tightly covered he is. Because, you know, I don't think Garrett necessarily gets a lot of separation on his routes, but he, like a couple inches of separation is basically like a whole mountain for Garrett Wilson, because he can go up and get pretty much any pass. So,
all right. A lot of the guys you named, we've already talked about, but defensive end, Rashad Weaver. He's a guy that they obviously brought in as a depth piece, but you've taken notice.
Yeah, he's jumped out each time. And because Michael Clemens wasn't in practice yesterday, he was able to get more reps with like guys like Quinnen Williams. And he stood out to me. He had a couple dominant reps. I think he beat Armin Membo one time. Yeah, I think I would have had him with 2 sacks. The first practice I covered, I had him with a couple sacks too. Like, he's the guy that has shown the ability to get pressure in the NFL. He had 5.5 sacks in 2022. The flip side of that is he hasn't gotten any sacks since then. So, you know, they saw some untapped potential with him, and they need somebody to emerge as the third defensive end or the fourth defensive end. So he's somebody I have my eye on. If he can keep this up, he's going to play his way into a role. They need somebody who can be more than just a pass rusher. Michael Clemens, in theory, is that he's the run stopper, hypothetically, even though it's more hypothetical than real so far in his career. But Rashad Weaver, someone I definitely have my eye on as we head to this next part of the offseason.
Quincy Williams, and this was talked about by both Quincy and Aaron Glenn, long conversation one-on-one with Aaron Glenn. Quincy's obviously had a good run of seasons here. He's been all pro caliber at times. So what, just take us in that conversation. What is that about when, you know, it's a new coach and it's a player who has kind of become a star?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. Quincy said he likes to go into every offseason with like a blueprint of how he needs to get better. And he hadn't come up with it yet when Aaron Glenn was hired. And they talked on the phone for an hour and a half, and Aaron Glenn laid out all the ways he needs to improve. Neither of them will share with us. And I get the sense that Aaron Glenn's done a good job of getting through to these guys about not saying anything to the media, is what I would say. Just the worst thing for their sake, because then they don't have any unnecessary headlines. But he talked about needing to be a better leader and all that stuff. But yeah, I think Quincy, the last 3 years, has been one of the best linebackers in the NFL. I don't think he was as good last year as he was the year before. He's way more inconsistent. Didn't make as many game-changing plays, I would say. But I think across the defense, there was a lot of issues. So I'm very intrigued by the impact that having Steve Wilks as a defensive coordinator is going to do for him, because I think they're going to blitz it a lot. And out of everybody on this roster, he's the most intriguing blitzer because he's so athletic. And we've seen what he can do when he blitzes. And so the next step for him is becoming a really good pass rusher. And I think that might happen in this defense. And, you know, you have Jamie Sherwood, who's capable of, you know, manning things in the middle and calling things out and playing good in coverage. So it's going to be I think that's going to be the biggest thing. And Quincy is in a contract year. They haven't signed him to a new deal. Maybe that's something that's being discussed. Jamie Sherwood was just paid as one of the top 10 highest paid linebackers in the NFL. And Quincy has had a better few years than Sherwood because he's been a starter all three. Does Quincy want a new contract? He clearly isn't demanding it because he's been at all of the voluntary workouts. So he has something to prove to a degree too. So I think it could be a pretty big year for him.
So we did competition that I left one out, but Brian Sternbeck called us out on it, so I'm going to bring this one up. Most important question of the day: who's winning the punting competition as of June
4th? So Kai Kroger and Austin McNamara. We haven't really seen much of them punting in when we've been in practice, unless they've been doing it off to the side during team drills. So I can't really give an answer, but you know, this will be my first punting competition, I think. So I might have to keep an eye on it pretty closely in training camp between this and the kicking. Like, maybe I just have like a special teams day when we get into the minutia of training camp and we're getting bored. Maybe I'll just have a day where I only focus on the punting and the kicking, and I declare a winner, and whatever I declare will have to be who they choose. So
I want stats.
By the way, Thomas
hang Morse time.
Said,
I want
Thomas Morstead signed with the Niners. He's reuniting with Saleh and Brant Boyer. So there you go. Jets West.
That Taylor backing me up says hang time stats when. Yeah, I want you out there with the stopwatch.
Yeah, my stopwatch.
Hang times. Okay. Yep. Let's see it. All right, final topic of the day, and we'll bring it up on the screen here. Sauce Gardner, best cornerback in the NFL. This was PFF on X. Sauce number one, Pat Surtain two, Trent McDuffie, Jalen Johnson, Derek Stingley Jr. five, DJ Reed six, Marlon Humphrey, Christian Benford, Zaire Alexander, and Denzel Ward, the top 10. PFF, I usually expect these things to be backed up by deep statistical analysis. Based on last year, I can't imagine that's the case. But Sauce missed practice this week to celebrate. Yes.
So we don't. Sauce will have to be there at mandatory minicamp next week unless he wants a fine, I would think. He hasn't given any indication either publicly or privately that I know that this is a holdout, so I wouldn't make any assumptions.
That was a question in the chat too, was whether we should worry about that.
But I mean, you know, he probably knew what he was doing when he wasn't at practice, and he decided to quote tweet this, pointing out that he's the number one corner in the NFL. So, I mean, I know that he does want to get paid as the highest paid corner in the NFL. Like, I think that's where his eyes are. Whether the Jets want to do that, we'll see. But I do think that's what he wants. And to that point, like, I do think he's still one of the top 3 to 5 corners in the NFL. I don't know that you can say he's better than Patrick Surtain after last year. But we talked about this a lot, so I'm not going to go too deep. But I think that he was a victim of his dominant first two seasons where he's an all-pro both years. So the expectations got raised to a level where if he didn't reach them, he was going to be criticized pretty heavily, and that's what happened. Like, he definitely needs to improve his tackling. He needs to be a better playmaker. I do think the nature of the defense they were in is a factor, too. I think he's excited about there's going to be a lot more man coverage. I think maybe Steve Wilks lets him travel a little more. I think I'm going to be interesting to see that. And so you might see a year where he gets his interception numbers bumped up, and maybe he gets back to the all-pro team, but I don't know that I'm ready to say he's better than Surtain, but I do think that he wants to get paid like he's in a brown corner. So that'll be something to keep an eye on. As you know, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but they cleared a bunch of cap space after June 1st with CJ Mosley and Aaron Rodgers numbers coming off the books. So they have the leeway to make a deal with Garrett Wilson or Sauce. Garrett was at practice, and which gave him the opportunity to hug Woody Johnson and talk to him for a little while in the middle of practice, schmooze with the boss who signs the checks. So if Garrett winds up getting the contract first, it's notable at least. But I do think slash wonder if they're going to get this done before training camp. I would if I was them. But I also don't
both
think
both of them. You think they should get both of them done before?
Yeah, I think they should. I think they should get both of them done because the longer you wait, the bigger the number gets. So you make Sauce the highest paid corner by 1 cent, and then a month, 6 months from now, he's like the fifth highest paid corner like that quickly. So I have no issue with doing that early, in my opinion. So I think they should sign both of those guys. The Jets do not get guys like this in the building very often. Sign them and you deal with the rest of it later. Like, you just do it. and you could debate whether they should sign Breeze. I wouldn't. Jermaine coming off an injury, I wouldn't. Quincy, even maybe I'd be open to Quincy. John Simpson is somebody I would re-sign, but the priority needs to be those two guys. They're probably not going to make any major additions the rest of the summer. So turn your focus to signing these contracts. I think they've had conversations. I don't know how far they've gotten, but there's interest in both sides in keeping them. And I would hope they get it done before the season starts at the very least.
And that's the thing, is like, they both stated that they want to be here. And considering how this thing has gone over their first 3 years, like, that's noteworthy to me that they're not like, all right, I'm almost free of this organization where I can sign a big free agent deal elsewhere. They want to be here.
Yep. Which is notable. I mean, Sauce had already said that Garrett was new to that party when he said it at the beginning of OTAs. So, like, you have star young players facing your franchise guys who want to be here. So keep them here. Like, I think fans would be pretty. I mean, there's fans who have turned on Sauce, which is crazy to me. But I think generally speaking, the fan base would be universally happy that they've locked these guys up. Whether it works out and they play out their contract, whatever, you deal with that later. But at the moment, they are young, ascending star talent guys. And those don't come around very often, especially in the same draft. So yes, it'll be a lot of money in the end of the day. Maybe you're paying these guys like $55 to $60 million a year or something like that. Like, that's a lot for two players, but premium positions and premium players and premium personalities and really good guys who are beloved by their teammates. So I would lock them up ASAP.
All right, final thought before we say goodbye.
Yeah, we got mandatory minicamp next week. I believe it's Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. So maybe we'll get a couple pods in, or maybe one to recap all of it. We'll talk about that next week. But after that, it's a summer break.
Vacation.
So yeah. And I'll be going to Greece. You'll be, I'm sure, going somewhere at some point with the family. So we
at least the beach. Yeah. I think Ocean City, New Jersey this year.
Yeah, we'll sort out schedule for the off season. Won't be as often, obviously, but then when training camp comes around, you'll hear from us pretty often. So looking forward to that. But yeah, so next week should be a busy one, and then everybody can relax for a little bit
and just think about the future. All right, great stuff. Congratulations one more time, Zach.
Thank you.
And we will talk to everybody soon. Thanks for joining the Flight Plan Podcast.